Welcome back to the Hoop Stumble Podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz. Joining me in New Zealand, Dylan Williamson.
Another day, another podcast. Hello, gentlemen.
Join us in Sacramento, Aaron Schroeder.
Good to be here on a new day, on a different day than the last podcast.
And joining us still in Mexico. He's just moved down there. He's permanent Mexican resident, Jack Dan. Yeah. How's it going?
I'm doing good. I lost my passport last night in Squid Row. So I will be recording this podcast and the next one permanently in my forever home in Mexico. I'm never leaving.
You don't need a passport for immigration if you just never come back.
Nope, don't need it.
All right. Well, gentlemen, let's talk some all defensive teams. Last time we chatted, it was all NBA. Now it is time for all defense. I started off last pod asking you guys if you went positionless, and I think we did fairly well. There was some positionless, still some positional, all defense. How many non-centers do you guys have?
Quite a few. I like to have fun with the all defensive teams. I'm not trying to be that particular.
What if I told you I had six?
You have six non-centers.
I have six non-centers.
Come on, guys.
Don't make up for that. Should we start with the defensive player of the year? That feels like
unless you've got a hot take, I think it's a foregone conclusion. I know that you're really high on Anthony Davis. You're one of the biggest Anthony Davis fans on the podcast, so I know that you had flirted with that idea. So if you want to make that case, we'll hear it. Otherwise, I think Gobert's run away with it. The Timberwolves are the best defense in the league, and he's the reason why.
I won't waste your time. I had Gobert first and then Davis second, followed by Victor Wembanyama.
I had Victor Wembanyama second. I actually had an argument in the chamber for Victor Wembanyama just in case. It was like a shattered glass in case like maybe one of you was going to go with Victor. I was like, oh yeah, it's my time. But no, it's Rudy. I can't ignore it.
I'm with Jack here. I have Victor as my number two here. It's slightly less contests per game, but a bigger differential and the deflections. This man is not just doing rim protection, but he's center of the court. Or, you know, picking off passes. He's absolutely right. This is Gobert's last year, and for the next decade, it's pretty much going to be Victor.
I have an insane Victor stat, if you're ready to hear it.
Give it.
Please.
213 of his blocks this season were recovered blocks, which means he didn't block them out of bounds, resulting in a turnover. He got the ball, and that resulted in Spurs ball, their possession. I don't know how often it resulted in a score, but 213 of his blocks recovered.
How many blocks is he?
Tim Duncan.
That's incorrect. It's a percentage of his 200. It's 60%. I fucked up the delivery, but there it is. He's got a shitload of recovered blocks, is the point.
That's crucial.
I fucked up
the
delivery somewhere. But it's
anti-Dwight Howard.
Of recovered blocks, yeah. It makes him infinitely more valuable as a defensive player because some people have the shot blocking isn't that valuable of a defensive metric because it does kill the possession for you. Like, you're not going to get the ball back because it's out of bounds. The high percentage of recovery blocks is the most in the league by a long shot. It's huge.
And he's getting that reputation. And
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's every stat you look at with him are just insane. The only other player to have a 3-1 season, 3 blocks, 1 steal, was Jaren Jackson. And he won the Defensive Player of the Year last year. So
Kirk Goldsberry did a whole piece on Dwight Howard. And although he's blocking the shots out of the way, what he determined was that there was this reputation that came along with it, and guys were less likely to try to drive and throw up shots against him. And you already can see that just watching Victor, of guys get in close, and they're like, we don't want you to just palm the ball straight out of our hands. Like, let's pull this back and not shoot this. So, yeah, he's my number two.
More crucially, he has 66 more recovery blocks than Rudy Gobert.
Man.
Boom. Should he be number one?
More. It's
interesting because he is the best defensive player in the league, but he's on the worst defense in the league. The rest of the roster isn't there yet for him to get consideration for awards like this.
The defensive rating swing with him off the court for the Spurs is -11.5, which is insanity. And it's kind of unfair to say that you take Wemby off this team and they're the worst defense in history. Even though it is true, but the worst defense in history is this year's Utah Jazz. So it's but they get really, that defensive rating with Wemby is touching the 130s. And that's just a ridiculous metric. No team had ever touched 120 prior to this season.
And with him, it's solid.
23rd. I don't know that song, but
better with him than with that. It's like 6 points. Yeah. It's better per 100 possessions. I'll take it. Does anyone else have anyone in their big three for DPOY?
That's where my ballot ended. I had three guys.
Yeah. I think that is actually all that it is. It's just a three-man ballot, which kind of disappointing. I was a little bit less impressed looking at Davis's defensive numbers. I mean, he is blocking a ton of shots. He is defending 19.1 in field goals per game, but only lowering the percentage by 2.4. And then defensive on-off metrics for him versus the Lakers, there's like zero difference him on versus him off, just on the defensive side of the court. And part of that is, one, he plays a ton of minutes. Two, if he's not playing, they're putting a lot of defenders out there. They're putting anyone that can play defense out there. But still, I was a little bit less impressed looking at the actual metrics.
Yeah, and maybe the worst one for him is that, the primary role of the center is to protect the rim, both in terms of contesting, but also preventing the guys from getting there by being in the right position. And opponents are making more than two-thirds of their shots at the rim when Anthony Davis is on the floor, which is below average among centers. So there's that also.
He also struggles against bigger physical centers. Sabonis, Nurkic have given him tons of problems this year. There's basically every team in the Western Conference, like every playoff team, has a guy that can capitalize on that weakness, except for the Thunder. They really don't. But most of the teams do.
Yeah.
Interesting note. He gets pushed around easy.
Yeah, but still very impactful. All right. Yeah, you guys are right. Defense may fly by a little bit faster here. If that's our big three, then who else do you guys have on the first team all defense? This is where I think we can have a little bit of fun.
It's going to get interesting. I feel like we're going to have like 10 different guys on first team.
Yeah, we would probably.
Dylan, let's hear it. I want to hear it from you.
Gobert and Wemby were locks. And then for my last spots, I went with, incredibly, one of the biggest rookie haters in the world. I put Chet in there as well. The center of a really good defense for the OKC Thunder. And then I went with Bam, who, if we're talking skill set, probably the most versatile defender, and the Heat are a really good defense when they don't have really a lot of good defensive players outside of him and Jimmy when he tries. And all reliable Splash Mountain, Brook Lopez was my fifth guy.
Wait, so you did not have Anthony Davis in your first team?
No.
Is he defensive still rating second in DPOY?
No.
Who's your DPOY? I thought we all just had this unanimous.
Gobert and Wemby, one and two, and I don't really care about third. It's a tie between the other guys.
you gotta put someone else on a ballot. The NBA is not gonna give us four ballots next year. You don't fill out your ballots properly.
Then let's go Chet. Fuck it.
Wow. Love it. Fucking love it.
The rookie ballot.
All right, show of hands. Who else put Chet on their first team? Good. Just Crickets. My hand is in the air.
Crickets.
Aaron, who all is your first team?
I had Herb Jones and Jalen Suggs.
Oh, man.
That's where I went. I like showing love to the defensive guards and the defensive teams. I care more about that than getting like it perfectly right, I guess. Suggs is the most fun perimeter defense guard defender to watch in the league. He is relentless. He just dodges screens like they aren't even there. The Magic are one of the best defensive teams. And Herb Jones is basically the best wing defender in the NBA. He has insane length and timing and patience. The patience was stands out the most to me. If you can have length and timing, but you can get caught up in a lot of pump fakes, a lot of moves. And I feel like Herb Jones is like, he just refuses to bite on these pump fakes and stuff.
It's almost Kawhi-like the way he defends. Like when a guy's in like triple threat or like back to basket post up and he's like, I'm going to shoot. He's like, no, you're not. So I'm going to shoot. He's like, no, you're not.
So yeah, I had Davis Gobert, Davis, Wemby. Man, first team all defense Wemby. And then Jalen Suggs and Herb Jones.
All right.
Yeah, I'm glad that we had some Jalen Suggs love because I was worried he was going to get snubbed. I don't have him on first team, but he's on my second. For my first team, I have Davis, Gobert, Wemby, and then my two stragglers are Bam and Herb Jones.
The stragglers.
And we've talked about both those guys, but Herb Jones is probably the best wing defender in the league. I don't think it's the Pelicans' defense is smothering, and he is the linchpin of it. He is the anchor of their defense away from the basket, which is rare and incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
So you got to give him credit.
They have a top 10 defense, and Jonas Valanciunas is their center. Jonas Valanciunas is one of the bottom 10 defensive centers in the league, and the Pelicans are a top 10 defense.
Yeah. Anchoring your defense away from the basket is incredible. The fact that they can do that is crazy.
He leads the league in 3 points contested. Anthony Davis, surprisingly enough, was fourth, and I've always said if Davis is out there contesting threes, Lakers are going to be fine. But yeah, Herb, 12 shot contests per game. Lowering opponents' percentage by basically 4, which lowering 3-point percentage from say 40% to 36 or 36 down to like 32, that's a big differential, or a much bigger differential than lowering at rim from 66 to like 62. Like that's a sizable advantage. He is on my second team.
I haven't checked this in a while, but last I heard, which was not that long ago, he was leading the league in blocked 3-point shots as well, which is actually a huge, huge deal. You know, players are still going to make contested 3-point shots. This is the NBA. Like, dudes can do this, but you can't make a blocked 3-point shot.
And they all came against Aaron Fox in one game.
All right. My first team is Rudy, Anthony Davis, Victor Wembanyama, Bam Adebayo, and Chet Holmgren. So we've got
nice
two unanimous in
about it.
Victor and Rudy. Sounds like we've got three guys for Bam. Dylan, you called him the most versatile. What else you got for Bam?
Bam's a little bit tricky because the numbers it's hard to quantify what he does because of the role that he plays. It's a lot easier to bring defensive statistics for a guy who's a drop big because you can look at, well, what do opponents shoot at the rim when he's on? But that's not the role that Bam's asked to play. And so it's a little bit more difficult. This is much more of an eye test kind of guy, you know, more so than the numbers. But like I said, the Miami are a really good defense. Bam is really the only plus defender that they probably that they play outside of Jimmy, who's maybe not entirely consistent, although still capable.
Fair. Aaron, Bam was not on your first team. Is he on your second? Is Bam getting snubbed? Okay.
No, he's on my second. I feel like his physical versatility, the speed and athleticism and coordination he brings to the center position allows the Heat to play a very kind of aggressive, physical, swarming defense because they know their back line is always going to be in the right spot and even can be out there if needed, further away from the basket. But he's always going to be one of the best defensive centers in the league.
Yeah, and here's one good number. Despite the fact that he doesn't contest a lot of shots at the rim because he doesn't play drop, opponents still take only 26% of their shots at the rim, which is 96th percentile. And he's also 96th percentile in differential in terms of on-off. So although he's not contesting shots at the rim, opponents just cannot get there when he's on the floor.
That's one of the things I was seeing in the numbers is he's defending 14 field goal attempts per game, which is notably less than some of the other centers. Like you keep saying, in drop, Brooke Lopez, poster boy for drop, 22 contest list of field goals. But Bam is lowering that percentage by 5.6. Brooke is lowering it by 2.5. So like almost three times, or 2.5 times, that's the differential. I like it. I like having Bam there. That's why he's my first team guy. Who else do we have some good overlap on? Herb? Aaron, you said a nice piece on Herb. Jack, you got some Herb takes?
No big Herb takes other than the fact that I think he's the best perimeter defender in the league. I mean, I don't know if that's a hot take. I don't think it is.
No.
Anchor of the defense, best perimeter defender in the league.
That's how good he is. That the fact that this guy's what, like a third year player? And it's not a hot take to say he's the best defensive perimeter player in the league.
And now he's a willing and able shooter from three. I mean, that contract that he's on is a steal. I don't know. I do not know how they got away with that. It's 3 for 54, I think, for her, which is ludicrous.
Yeah, he's worth at least like twice that.
Oh, yeah. I give him 30. I texted Aaron because there was some idiot reporter leaked a story about the Pelicans that was totally wrong, saying that they were shopping Herb Jones, which obviously they weren't doing. But when it broke, I thought it was real. And I texted Aaron. I was like, would you trade every first-round pick we had for Herb Jones?
Because yes.
I would. would.
Then the contract's more valuable than any rookie you're going to get, really.
Mm-hmm. I'd do it. It's like drafting a sure defensive stopper with the first overall pick in a draft is what trading for Herb Jones would be like. Because that contract is essentially rookie scale, and that's what he is.
Yeah. To have that moving forward, cost controlled. All right. First team done. Boom. Some combination of Gobert, Davis, Victor, Herb, Bam, and then we each kind of have some other guys thrown out there. Aaron, give me your second team.
I had Bam Adebayo, like I mentioned, Chet Holmgren, Derek White, Alex Crusoe, and Jaden McDaniels.
Okay. You're leaving off one of my guys that I really like. Dylan, who is your second team?
Three guys we've already talked about, Anthony Davis, Jalen Suggs, and Herb Jones, plus a great shout from Aaron, Alex Caruso. And then I went with my last spot for Jared Allen.
Man, I feel really bad not having Caruso on my list because he's my 11th guy. He's my last guy to make or not make it. Jack, who is your second team?
Jaden McDaniels, Jalen Suggs, Alex Caruso, Chet Holmgren, Derek White.
I like run lockstep.
Yeah, I also really like Caruso. I almost put in either Kawhi or Jared Allen in that position. Caruso was my like 10th guy, but those were the two outliers for me. Kawhi, Jared Allen.
Okay, I'm missing one of your guys. Suggs, Holmgren, White, Caruso, McDaniels. McDaniels, there he is.
Yeah.
The good McDaniels.
The good one, yeah, not the crap one.
Not the crap one. What's up with Toronto collecting the crap brothers? Like, they got the wrong MPJ.
Crap brothers, oh my god.
That's the wrong Porter and the wrong McDaniels.
I don't even know if they have that McDaniels anymore. I feel like he got moved. He was with Philly.
They might not have the Porter either for much longer.
Man, that Raptors.
Well, they definitely don't have that Porter.
Oh, that guy's done.
I feel bad. All right, I went maybe too center heavy. I don't have Suggs or Caruso on here. Someone give me some Suggs cases.
Oh, give me a second. Hold up.
The Bulls are starting Nikola Vucevic and Andre Drummond. Those are their two centers, and they're still like a half capable defensive team. And that is Alex Caruso just making life hell for anyone around the perimeter.
It's ridiculous what he's able to do with his physical tools. The fact that he's not like an incredibly big guy, the fact that he can still offer supplemental rim protection, that he's one of the best nail defenders, menace in the passing lanes, but also can defend like really like 1-4 despite being like 180 pounds. Like this dude defends Kawhi. You just like can't do you can't put your body into him because his hands are so good. I think maybe the most versatile perimeter defender in the NBA.
He gave Durant fifths in one of those Suns games.
This dude's like 6'6", 180, and you can't like overpower him. He's just too sneaky.
I don't even think he's 6'6". Hands are too good. He's 6'5".
Yeah. I got Suggs numbers. Do you need convincing on Jalen Suggs? I was hoping that he was going to be unanimous.
No, I didn't quite get there with him. I went a little bit more big heavy. I want to push back on Caruso for just a minute, which hurts me to do because you guys know I love the bald eagle. The Bulls, nope. I don't have anything to push back. I read my numbers wrong. That's
yeah.
All right, should put him in here. I'll have to figure out someone else to bump out because he's leading the league in deflections. I flipped his defensive rating. I had it as a negative when it should be a positive in my spreadsheet in here, and I was like, man, why are they so much better with him on or off than on? But nope, that's a spreadsheet error. Sorry, Caruso. My love for you failed.
We'll never here. Die.
Yeah,
it will never die.
I should have thrown on my Alex Caruso hoodie that I got from alexcaruso.com. It's a great purchase.
Some elite merch. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Give me the Suggs case.
Jalen, so if there was an award for, so there's obviously a clutch player of the year, but if the NBA decided to add a clutch defender of the year, Jalen Suggs is going to win that award every single year. In close games, in clutch moments, Jalen Suggs defends his opponents to shooting 25% from the field. He has defended 13 game-winning attempts, and none of them have hit. He is top 10 in deflections and charges drawn. He's top 10 in both those categories in the fourth quarter, and he leads in deflections in the fourth quarter. He's a disgusting defender, and he turns it on in big games, and his intensity with the Magic is crazy. They put him in a game, it's like an Energizer Bunny. He's like Westbrook for the Clippers. It's the same type of energy. He's huge.
That's what we needed. I like it.
I mean, just the best point of attack defender in the league. I don't know. I think it was Jack mentioned earlier. You like impossible to screen. Like no matter what you do, he's just like you're just never going to get him. He just doesn't.
He'll fight over, he goes around it.
He does not quit on any screen. Like that's one of the big arguments as to why like all defensive teams should be really all bigs, because bigs at least are able to stay in every single play. They're able to impact almost every position because they are in the center, they're at the rim, they're able to help on almost everything. Whereas defensive perimeter players, you know, their impact is somewhat limited because you can involve them in screens on and off the ball. It's really hard to stay like on a really good player. But Jalen Suggs is like the exception to that. Like you just cannot get rid of this dude. He's going to stick on your point of attack guy.
Yeah, and just like Suggs has a teammate that's the same way, who I really, really wanted to put on this all-defensive team, but I knew that none of you guys were going to let it happen because he's averaging like 17 minutes a game. But Jonathan Isaac is the most ridiculously broken defender I have ever lived. He is unbelievable. He's been unbelievable this year. He defends at all three levels. The Magic do not need to play a center to be successful because they can just throw Jonathan Isaac in there and he will magically block like five shots.
He is their backup center a lot.
He's playing with Mo Wagner, who's like one of the worst defensive centers in the league. Really good offensive center, which is why the Magic's bench is so good. But they can get away with Mo Wagner as their center because they've got Jonathan Isaac to just cover up for all of his deficiencies.
Yeah. I wanted to put him in so bad, but 17 minutes a game, you can't.
He also is not going to hit the game's minimum. I looked at him for this. Yeah. Him, Draymond Green, who also has really great hit metrics. You know, they're just not going to hit the minimum.
Probably
games
Embiid,
required.
Right? Embiid
as well.
Been a contender, yeah.
Yeah. So I went, my second team, I guess I didn't read aloud to you guys, I'm just looking at it on the spreadsheet, was Herb, Jared Allen, Derek White, Brooke Lopez, and Aaron Gordon.
Okay.
I'm the only Aaron Gordon guy out here, so I'm just going to throw out my case, which is one, he is kind of the captain of their bench defense. A lot of the times they are playing without a center when they go to those bench lineups, and he has to take on the role of the center. He also is responsible for guarding all of the bigger wings, your LeBrons, your Kawhis, your Paul Georges, your Kevin Durant, all of those guys. He's contesting 12 shots a game, making a defensive impact that is second only to Rudy Gobert for guys who are contesting at least 10 shots per game. Really solid defensive metrics all around, when good numbers is on deflections and it just, you know, we watched him go through the playoffs, and this is a little bit of a belated playoff take where he had to defend all of these guys and was the primary defender, a huge piece of Denver. But I wanted to recognize that. I guess it's a bit belated, but I'm surprised I am the only guy that has Gordon.
Yeah. No, Aaron Gordon would have been on my third team all defense if we had one. And I do think in terms of talking forwards, if we're not calling Giannis a forward, if we're not calling Herb a forward, I think Aaron Gordon is the best forward defender as an on-ball guy in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that similarly, you know, similar case to what I just made for like Jonathan Isaac, he plays next to Nikola Jokic, who's a bottom 10 starting defensive center, and the Nuggets are a really good defense.
Are you the only Brook Lopez guy?
No. Dylan had him on first team.
Dylan had him. Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Holy. Whoa, I missed that. Yeah.
Yeah. Former defense. Wait, did he win a DPOY that 1 year? He won DPOY, right?
I don't think so.
No, he was just.
They give it to Marcus Smart instead?
Second in DPOY.
It's the Jaren Jackson year.
Oh,
yeah. It's Jaren Jackson.
God, even worse. The Jaren Jackson year is like one of the three fewest minutes per game years. It's like him, the first Dennis Rodman, and the Michael Cooper year, because he's like 30 minutes a night. And I'm just, that bugged me. But yeah, I've got Brooke. It's just, I know it is drop. I know it's all the system, all the funneling that Milwaukee does, but the man has an impact. You get to the rim and you're kind of stuck. You have to throw up a shot that you don't like.
Yeah, it's like the opposite case of Bam, where it's like, he's not versatile. Like you switch him, no chance. Adrian Griffin tried to play him like up to touch in the pick and roll, and it was a fucking disaster. But in drop, like you just cannot score against him. When he's backing up and he's at the rim, you just can't shoot over him. And the defensive impact is statistically verifiable. Opponents just can't make shots at the rim when he's on the floor.
He also had to do so, so freaking much this year. I mean, the sieve that is Damian Lillard. Maybe Jusuf Nurkić actually isn't that bad on defense. Maybe, like, he's been seemingly fine on Phoenix. Maybe it's just guys blow past Lillard at such a high volume that we've underrated how good Nurkić is at defense.
Yeah. I want to mention one other thing with Brook Lopez, which doesn't get brought up because it's kind of a hard thing to see, which is his impact on rebounding. So he's one of these guys like an OKC Steven Adams or some of these other guys where they aren't grabbing the rebound, but the defensive rebounding numbers when they're on the floor are so ridiculous that the impact is clear, that these guys just don't let anyone else get on the offensive boards. And, you know, there's sort of this idea, particularly among like more casual fans, that rebounding is when you go up and you jump up and you grab the defensive rebound. Like, that's what makes a good rebounder. You know, Andre Drummond, you know, 2015, all-time great rebounder because he jumped up and he grabbed the ball the most times. But what impactful rebounding really is stopping the opponent getting the rebound. And no one can grab offensive rebounds when Brook Lopez is on the floor, even if he doesn't grab it himself all the time.
Fun Brook Lopez question. Now that the Nets are in basketball hell, how long do you think he's going to hold the franchise points leader record? Because he's a weird one to hold it. But he, with how bad the Nets look, with how bad their future looks, he might hold it for another decade. I'm shocked he still had it. I thought KD was going to get it, or Kyrie, or one of those guys, but none of them did it. It's still Brooks.
Aaron and I posited the question, could Buck Williams come back and score 4 points in an NBA game? Like, could you just get him out there?
How old is Buck Williams?
64.
Oh, wait. Well, that's doable. Not great. That's not that
doable. 4 points? How many shots? Yeah. How many chance?
Listen, here's the thing. Here's my plan. You do it in a game where they play Golden State, and you have someone else agitate Draymond Green. Get those techs. Buck can hit.
Get him to the line.
Yeah, get him to the line. Buck can get 3 points at the free throw line off of two techs. He'll knock down three of the four, and then all he needs is one layup. Can we get this man?
Isn't a tech just one free throw, though?
Oh, true. I'm thinking.
So you piss off Draymond. And
a flagrant foul's two ticks, right?
Yeah.
Two free throws.
You piss off Looney. You piss off Kerr. You grab a fan. You're fine.
The Buck Williams is a 66% career free throw shooter. You might have to add some other ones on there.
How tall is he?
I think 6'10".
Okay. Yeah.
He's a big dude.
He just turned 64.
He can still make a layup. If he's wide open under the hoop, you could throw him the ball and he could throw it in the hoop.
He retired in 98. That's not that long ago. He's still got it, right?
He's
not even alive.
We got to have him play the Bucks so he can be guarded by Dan.
So, like, you know, he's probably kept himself in shape.
Yeah.
All right. So Lopez is going to hold that record for a little bit longer. We've got four more guys that one of us has nominated at least. Chet, Allen, White, McDaniels. First one to talk picks the guy. Go.
Derek White has more blocks than Giannis.
That's pretty good.
And Jared Allen.
Easily the best rim protecting guard in the league. Like not even a debate.
Crazy,
like, the gap
versatile.
Between him and second is the gap between like second and 100th.
It's unreal. His shot blocking ability, just the time. And it's like, and that's not like he's chasing blocks. It's real defensive impact. I do want to mention Chet. I was all in on Chet Holmgren. Like as a rookie, I'm like, because he got like bullied by Kenneth Lofton. And I remember people being like, Embiid's going to break this dude. And like for every post up that gets you 2 points every three tries, Chet is going to be doing crazy shit in transition. He's going to be guarding 1 through 5. He's going to be pulling up from 3. And obviously it's not all defensive stuff, but I feel like the catalyst of this Thunder season, obviously SGA has been like an MVP candidate, but Chet has been better than anyone on earth predicted he could be. I think we thought he could be good with some growing pains, but he has been a legitimate, like, if he made the All-Star team, you probably wouldn't have bat an eye on it, like a top 40 player in the NBA.
I had to look at him for all NBA. I looked at him and J-Dub. Like, how many All-Stars is OKC getting next year? Will it be two? Will it be three?
Three.
I
think it could be three. I like Jalen Williams a lot.
Yeah. Best Jalen in the NBA.
It'll be four when Isaiah Joe takes off.
What? No. Jalen Brunson. Jaylen Brown.
I was thinking Brown. I think I'd rather have next season. I'd probably take Thunder Jaylen over Celtics Jaylen.
Not next Jaylen.
Yeah, next Jaylen's the top.
Hawks Jaylen.
Hey, we get to most improved.
Yeah, we'll talk about Hawks Jaylen later.
All right. Chet there. Jared Allen. Both Dylan and I had Jared Allen. Neither Jack or Aaron had Jared. Dylan, why'd you have Allen?
It's a pretty boring case. Like, there are much more interesting players to make an argument for. But it's a simple case. Like, does everything well, protects the rim, doesn't foul, rebounds well, and is the center of a defense, which has been really good despite having not a lot of defensive players. If you look at a guy, you know, a team playing two small guards, you know, you think about how poor those Portland Trailblazers teams were with Dame and CJ McCollum, that they were never able to get out of like the 20s defensively. You just can't survive with two small guards. And, you know, this guy's got like Isaac Okoro is a decent defender. And then you're like going to like Dean Wade or Caris LeVert to find like a positive defender. And the Cavs are fourth in the league in defense. Evan Mobley, I shouldn't discredit him too much. He has missed a lot of time, but he's a good defender.
Yeah, Mobley he's played 46 games. Niang
has been a good defender too. Like Niang,
Struce has been
good.
Playing.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah,
Struce's been playing better
too.
I think it's easier for these guys to survive on the floor when they have a really good rim protector behind them.
Yeah,
but yeah,
absolutely.
Niang as a charge drawer. Incredible ability to protect the rim despite not being able to jump.
I think he drew like three charges in the game that me and Aaron went to. We watched him hit the deck constantly. He's so chubby. He's one of the few like, oh wow, like that's a chubby NBA player.
Yeah.
There's not very many guys in the league can say that about. Sorry, Georges. Love you. You're a good interview.
Hey, that's pretty much everyone we got.
That's all the defensive teams, yeah.
Good stuff, guys.
Were any of you guys surprised to like not even consider Mikal Bridges? Like that kind of felt like he was going to be the guy to be a defensive guy last year. I mean, he was the universal connector in Phoenix as far as their defense went, and now he's like not even sniffing a nomination.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the biggest defensive fall off if you look at what he was a year and a half ago compared to now. That he was like a, if we're talking positional all NBA first team kind of guy, and now he's, I mean, probably not even a positive. He's probably a negative now.
Mm. He's just so miscast over in Brooklyn. I hate to be like that. I told you so, guy. But I think, it wasn't just me. A lot of other people thought that he was pretty miscasted as the star in Brooklyn, and it's hurting his defense too. He's expected to do so much on the offensive end of the floor. He does not have the capacity to be a number one guy on an even good team. So expecting him to carry that level of load and also be your top defender is insanity. Especially when, I mean, shit, if Claxton and Sharp are on the court, then it's a little bit easier because you've got a really solid rim defender behind you. But when those two guys aren't on the floor or hurt, like De'Ron was for a lot of the season, that backup center position is ugly. They're putting Trent and Watford out there. Not good.
I do have Trent Watford stock. I believe he'll be something.
Yeah, I like Trent Watford.
Oh, man, really? I found the two only Trent and Watford fans in the entire world, and they're both here.
I think when I did some mock draft stuff for that, I felt like I had him like mid second round. Yeah. Undrafted by, I had him 39th. So like that's my level of investment is I believe he should be.
Okay, that is,
you know, not like telling you he's going to be great, but I believe he could stick around the NBA. Yeah, I looked at it and I was a little bit surprised. I also kind of weighed Drew Holiday to some degree. I mean, the Celtics were doing a fun having him defend centers and then have help come thing for a while there defensively. I ended up giving the nod to Derek White, but if you want to tell me Holiday is the better defender of the two this year, I'll take that case. Doesn't sound like any of us are, but.
And if I'm asking one guy to guard one guy in a single possession to win a game, I think I'm probably choosing Drew Holiday for that one possession. But on the whole, I think it's Derek White this year.
Fair.
Yeah. Do you guys want to empty out the notebook, rapid fire? Any other guys you considered?
Shea.
I had 10.
Dort.
No,
Jalen Williams.
About.
basically all the I did have SGA and then changed him last minute.
I wanted to shoehorn in Jared Allen too, but I couldn't talk myself into him over Caruso.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fair.
All right. To the all rookie teams. Gentlemen, is it safe to assume that your rookie of the year ballot is going to go Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, and Brandon Miller in that order?
Yeah. I would actually imagine that our first team is probably all the same all around, right?
I believe the fifth guy will be wild shit. Is guy number four for all of you Derek Lively?
Oh, fuck.
No, but he's my fifth guy.
No, he is not. He's up there, but he's not there.
Okay. He's my number four. Who's Jack? Who's your four?
I had Jaime. I know he didn't have the greatest. I know he has cooled, but I want to reward his first half. And I think that that kind of player is like, he's the ultimate connector. He's the Miami Heat guy. I think what he did this year, he proved a lot of value. And I think in the playoffs, he's going to be, I think a lot of rookies are sometimes not great in the playoffs. I think Hawkins is an exception. I think he's going to look good in the playoffs. He's going to fit in that sort of situation. He was there in UCLA. He played in a lot of big games.
Jaime Hawkins Jr. I came back in for a Jaime Hawkins Jr. talk. I don't know where I went. Oh. I aired out for a second. I had him fourth if we skipped over that.
No, that's right where we're at.
All right, perfect. I saw him at UCLA. I saw him. I went to March Madness and I watched whoever they played in the first round. And I remember actively thinking, that guy seems pretty good, but I don't see how his game translates to the NBA because he was like a mid-post-up player.
Yeah.
He was like the classic 6'10", like kind of inside outside scorer, and I was like, this is a college basketball player. And
I thought the same thing.
I watched one game and you're like, have any other tape, but based off that one game I didn't see the pro thing scaling. But he's been the shooting's come down a bit, but he at least showed it, and he's a much better athlete than I anticipated.
Aaron, for that UCLA game, did you watch that game and think that Johnny Juzang was going to be the NBA guy? Because I think they were teammates that year, and he's in the league, but he's not that guy.
I don't remember.
Okay. Because like, he in college was the guy I looked at, and I was like, oh shit, like he could play. But
What I remember most was the game, but it was a doubleheader, and the game before that was the Princeton upset. It was like the 15-2 Princeton upset. I don't remember the rest of the UCLA team.
I have Jaime as my fifth rookie behind in the Lively. Dylan, who is your fourth guy?
I went with Pods.
You went started with Pods.
played valuable minutes as a positive contributor on a team that was trying to win games.
I like it. I had Pods as on my second team.
Oh, I have Pods at five. That's Pods. Oh, fantastic. My first team. There we go.
All right. So, Aaron, Dylan, who is your fifth guy for first team then?
I had Lively. I had Wemby, Holmgren, Miller, Hawkins Jr., and Lively.
Okay. Dylan, also Lively?
No, I had Jaime at four and Pods at five.
Pods at five.
Right.
I like it.
Lively is at six for what it matters.
Pods was at six for me. Although, okay. we'll get into it a little bit more. But, guys, we got to start at the top. Victor. I know the number one is obvious. The only thing that's not obvious is just how high of a fucking ceiling this guy has, right?
There is like, no ceiling.
There is no ceiling.
He could be the best player of all time. Yeah.
The ceiling is the greatest basketball player to ever live.
The ceiling is the roof.
Yeah.
We came into the season questioning, could he average 2.5 blocks a game? He is averaging 3.5. On the year, 21 points, 3.5 blocks, almost 10.6 rebounds, and almost 4 assists. Also 1.3 steals. Like the 101 block and steal category, there's like 10 guys a year that do that. He's one of them, and he's also doing it with 3 blocks. Not crazy efficient offensively, but...
Yeah, only guy since Jaren, and Jaren won the Depot.
We'll do the top 100 over the offseason, and he's going to be in the top 15, whether you fucking like it or not. And I said he was going to average 3 blocks a game. I said that, because I'm a fucking... basketball genius. The ceiling is basically if San Antonio can build a good team around him. I mean, if they were competent, he'd be all NBA. And I even considered him. I had him, like, if there was a fourth team, he would have made it.
Jack, does he get an over maxi for you?
It's close. I think I'd be okay with that. I'm very high on Wemby. I'm thinking Wemby Wemby would be like in my top 25 right now.
Sorry, what the fuck are we talking about? Tyrese Maxey? Wembanyama was 25-14-6 with 5.5 blocks a game.
Aaron, it was like 3 days ago when we talked about all NBA.
Callback to 3 days ago, man. We talked about that a week ago. What are you talking about?
Gosh.
You're wearing a different shirt, Aaron.
There's different jerseys on the wall. Yeah. We've transitioned to the all depoy. Yeah, I guess we should probably...
Last podcast. I had Pods as my... Actually, my seventh guy on the second team. And I had Kayson Wallace as the first guy. I like Kayson Wallace.
Dude, he was my sixth.
Consummate pro. Good defender. Fits in well with OKC. I wish OKC would just miss one of these picks. Dude, the jury's out on Usman Jang, but we knew that would be, you know.
He was a prospect.
And that they've been too good to even have him see the floor very much. So, one day Kayson will replace Josh Giddey, and Jack believes this too.
I do. And I also have Kayson at my seventh, you know, my second team. He's great. He's awesome. He's a good defender, great connector on offense. He's solid.
Man, you guys are just following this right through with seconds and third. All right, so I'm going to throw out names and tell me if he is not on your second team, because I feel like there's not too many guys here. I went like 15 deep, a couple of honorable mentions that I don't think really deserved consideration.
Wait, quick question. Do game requirements count for rookies?
They do not.
Bang. Okay, we're good.
Yeah.
I just had a scary thought.
Jack and Dylan is Lively in your second team.
Yeah.
All right. Jaime Jaquez, Aaron, is he in your second team?
He's in my first team. I had him fourth.
Oh, it was Pods that was on your second team.
Pods in my second team.
Flipped those two for you. All right. Keontae George, is he in everyone's second team?
No. I wanted to so bad.
Okay, I'm going to be the lone man.
Yeah. I was such a big Keontae George guy early in the year. I actually had him in my midseason, like, first team. I really, really liked him. But he has been a cone for the last 20 games. And I really expected him to take off in a big way and take on a bigger load. And when the games mattered less, you know, focus on him doing him getting more into his offensive bag. But it really didn't happen. And his defensive rating has gone through the roof. I think he's the worst defender in the league right now.
Sorry.
And also,
it's funny to label him as the worst defensive
player. No, but by defensive rate, fine. By defensive rating, he's the worst defender in the league.
I agree. He shoots 30% from the field on a team that sucks. When I had this mocked out, I had Scoot Henderson ahead of him. I was more interested in this Scoot Henderson season. It's been, and I could like, I'll talk about that later, but I think Scoot died on the basketball cross in a way that Keontae George has not, and I respected it.
Scoot started out really poorly. He's been slowly making gains. Like, it's hard to make it out as poor as he started, but he's up to fourth in rookie points per game after being abysmal early. Post All-Star break, he has 15.5 points, 6.1 assists. Yes, the efficiency is not great, but the field goal percentage is up from 37.5 to 41.5. Like, it's coasting in the right direction. We all knew that Scoot would be a rough start. So, like, I have Scoot on my second team. Does anyone else have Scoot?
Man, you did it. I'm proud of you. I couldn't get
there. I do not have
what
Scoot.
What the
I
hell?
I didn't even consider him.
Okay, so no, I think
I could make. I actually think I could make a third team that didn't have Scoot.
Jack, go to hell. You're a fucking
lying.
You're lying. Okay,
Scoot was my 15.
Was
Sasha Bezenkov cannot be above Scoot?
I'm not saying Sasha. No one is saying Sasha.
No.
Fine. Guys that I won't have on my list that I think are better or that had a better year. Because that's what we're talking about here. Anthony Black, Bilal Kulbali.
Fuck no. Hell no. Black plays like 10 minutes a game.
He plays great defense. Stop.
I'm not interested.
No, he's one of the guys that goes from third team to starter when someone's hurt and then just chucked to the sun out of the rotation.
He was so good.
I had Anthony Black on my second team.
Thank you. kidding you. Geez.
When you're at this point and you're talking about just the season,
and you're
going through and you're like, okay, bring up this guy. Is he positive on either end of the floor?
Yes.
Most of these guys are massive negatives on both ends. Anthony's like negative offensive player, but he's a good defender. He's making a positive contribution, which is more than a lot of these other guys are.
Points per game.
Bond score watching. Hello.
Oh my goodness. That's
you have to be on the court to make an impact.
I had Bilal Coulibaly over him. I thought he was interesting this year.
I ran into
many more people could I name before naming Scoot? Oof.
How many like average 12 to 15 minute a game guys on the worst team in the league that kind of can shoot threes and are kind of positive on defense are we going to list before it's like Scoot Henderson was like the starting point guard in like went through the trials and tribulations on a team that was like at least kind of something.
Could I interest you in Trace Jackson Davis?
He is on my second team.
More than black.
Yeah, I think I'd take him over Scoot.
So who do? Can I read my second team? I had Kayson Wallace, Pods, the Thompson twins, and Gigi Jackson.
Motherfucker, Aaron. Hell yeah.
Thank you.
Derek Lively, Kayson Wallace, Gigi Jackson, and the Thompson twins.
Let's go. In sync.
Oh my God.
I just said the same as them, but Anthony Black over Gigi.
Oh my God.
Nate's like disbelief. Gigi Jackson, he's like 6'10". He shoots the hell out of the ball. And like in a Grizzly season, that is like truly miserable. I actually think Gigi Jackson's going to be good going in the future. This is not like I really don't think it's a good stats bad team. He's like 20 years old, and I love his tools.
Aaron, 20? He's not 20. He's younger.
He's 19.
He's 19.
I think that you're looking at someone in a couple of years that could be like legitimate 20 points per game. I think his tools are there.
Points per 100 possessions, he is averaging 27.8 people, and he is a 19-year-old. Gigi Jackson's on my second.
Gigi, in his last 38 games here, we're looking at 15 points per game, 4.4 rebounds per game, 44% field goal, 36% from the three-point line. Like, it's okay splits. It's here. It is on one of the worst teams. And I should note, he didn't start getting into the rotation until even more guys got hurt. Like, I like what he's done. I've enjoyed what Gigi's done. But the fact that you need to have so many guys in front of you get hurt, and you're only doing this for half of a season, I couldn't get there with him. He made my honorable mentions category of like, I really like what you did, bro, but I just couldn't get there. The reps and the opportunities were not enough.
But if you were to do this season again, they would be like, Chase Jackson's really good, and he would start. He would get minutes. I think the only reason that the roster had to fall apart is because he was 19. Like, they weren't going to give the 19-year-old reps until they had to. And then when he got those reps, you're like, holy shit, this guy's actually really good.
And because he wasn't a high draft pick, like Scoot got minutes not because he deserved them, but because he was a high draft pick. Like, the dude is a 43% effective field goal percentage. Like, he's just throwing the ball at the baseline on half the time.
And he proved that he could handle a pretty high volume. He shot really well from three at a 89th percentile in terms of volume. So, big shooter. And 54 from the corners as well, which is ridiculous for a guy who can defend at his level. And by the way, he's 19.
Memphis has played...
You know he's 19 years old.
He's 19.
Memphis has played 32 players this season, and it took them like 20 something guys before they gave Gigi Jackson a chance
because he was 19 years old. Yeah,
that's an indictment of the Grizzlies, not of Gigi.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
playing freaking Jalen Noel before him, Trey Jameson, Timmy Allen, Jacob Gilliard. Like, I'm just saying, how many times have we seen the tank commander come in here and put up good numbers for like just a garbage teams?
Does the fact that he has the highest block rate in the NBA among non-centers move you at all?
I mean, if this was all defensive, maybe. I'm interested in his future, but I couldn't get there with 44 games, 1,000 minutes, when we're looking at other guys who have like had to play more and been counted on in bigger moments. That's That's my only thing with Gigi.
Can we touch on the Thompson twins, like the best rebounding guards in NBA history? These just freakish athletes. I'm not even sure what kind of basketball they play or if it could be more than this, like what the next step looks like for those two guys. It could be just this forever. And like they never put the pieces together offensively, but man, they're insane to watch.
Yeah, I mean, future all defensive team locks, already two of the best defensive guards in the league.
It's kind of funny because the reality of the Thompson twins is so much different than what I was expecting from them coming out of OTE. I expected out of OTE like two sloppy, not very fundamental scorers that, you know, I did not at all expect two non-scorers that were incredibly gritty defenders and cared about the little things and rebounding. Is that what OTE is for? Really? That's not the vibe I got from OTE at all, that they were like, oh, hey, rebounds, but this is what they do. It's insanity. I was totally wrong on those two.
Yeah, if you told me that they were going to have more of a like play style, not the passing chops of LaMelo, but if you were to tell me that like the personality and the aura around them was LaMelo-esque coming out of OTE, I would have 100% just bought it hook, line, and sinker. But instead, they're both sub 10 points per game. They're both averaging 6.4 rebounds per game, both over a steal and close to a block. Like,
they're both willing passers and facilitators.
Do you guys have a preference, like going forward, of Amen or Asar?
Yeah.
Which one?
I like Amen. Yeah.
Okay. Just curious.
I like the one that's not on the Pistons.
But he really can't shoot. Also, shot is worse, I think. Amen's shot is better.
So
I have no numbers to support that, but I think
I think you're right. Asar actually is a better 3-point shooter, but he shoots worse from the free throw line. Yeah. And it's like the volume.
Is it like 16% to 20% though? So it's
it's 14 to 19.
They're both sub Mendoza line shooters. It's so bad.
I mean, Asar has put up 113. Amen has put up 55. Like, if you're going to shoot sub 20%, I'd much rather have the guy that's only putting up 55 threes, like, or 56. He's one less than games played. Like, fine. You get a freebie. If you're going to play gritty defense, you get 1 3 a game, even if you can't shoot them. I'll let anybody that plays that much D shoot them.
Yeah. Amen Thompson, for sure, is my preference.
Yeah. I forget which one is which, but the one that's on the Rockets.
Nate, who is your second team?
So my second team was Trayce Jackson-Davis, Cason Wallace, Pods, Keyonte George, and Scoot Henderson.
Okay.
I'm a lot more forgiving to the guys that are the go-to lead ball handlers and are asked to do a lot. Guys who are asked to kind of be, if not the focal point of the team, but like the focal point. The guys is who are asked to set up. And both of them have improved. Keyonte George post All-Star break, up to like 15 points and 5 assists. Like, you know, these are the guys that are going to make or break it in the future. And I've liked what they've done thus. Well, haven't liked what they've done, but I at least appreciate the struggles of doing what they've done versus Asar getting benched on the Pistons.
It's Monty Williams' fault.
I don't mind a little bit of projection as well with the all rookie teams. Like, I would prefer Embiid over Malcolm Brogdon, for example, even though Brogdon was better. Like, I don't mind a bit of projection. And certainly I think that Keyonte, who I've still got stock in, and Scoot are probably going to be better players than Brandon Podziemski and Cason Wallace. But they are probably two of the worst NBA players this season in terms of just overall impact on winning.
I mean, for just this season and throwing projection out of the window, Scoot might not have even been the best rookie on his own team.
I did really consider Tumani Kamara.
You are forgetting about about Father Christmas is what I'm going to start calling it. Duop Reese.
Oh, I've not forgotten Duop Reese. Yeah.
I had a third team, and I had Tumani Kamara and Duop Reese on my third
team. Hell yeah. Tumani Kamara would be on my third team. He's good. I like that.
Yeah, two or three weeks ago, Dylan and I did unconventional cases for awards, and I made the unconventional case for Duop Reith to win most improved player because...
Oh, that's good.
He went from Australia and Lebanon and China to the NBA at 27. That's improvement in my mind. Like, I love me some Duop Reith, but...
Father Christmas. Jordan Hawkins is up there for me as well, but he didn't play very much, which sucked. Yeah. I will never forgive the Pelicans for not playing Jordan Hawkins. Please trade him to us. Trade him to the Kings or anywhere.
They got too many wings.
They're a ridiculously deep team.
Jordan Jordan Hawkins is such an animal. He's going to be so good.
Jordan Hawkins looks like Kobe when he's playing.
He does. Like,
just,
he does.
Just like the shot making. It's like, oh, God. Like the audacity as a rookie to
Yes.
He's got like a Michael Porter Jr. green light already. It's crazy.
If you guys ever can get some film of this, of Kobe's rookie year, it's the same. It's the like, you shouldn't shoot this. You're going to airball the shot. Like, fuck it. Just go for it.
Can we rapid fire those improved six man, and then I want your Jackson
player? Sure, Aaron. How's your time down in the Mariana Trench?
Did I miss it?
No, you're just sounding like a little far away. You're good.
Far away. Here I am.
Can we at least give a couple moments on Brandon Miller? Because I don't feel like we've discussed him at all. And I think we did a fair amount of ragging on the Hornets for choosing him over Scoot in the beginning. Where were we wrong? What were we right about? Who has some Brandon Miller takes?
I'll just start by saying I don't think that we were wrong. The reason that I had Scoot over Brandon Miller is I think he's a better long-term prospect, which I still think he is. But I think the shooting, we all expected to kind of be decent coming right out, and it really was. Like, he was just able to put the ball in the basket at a pretty decent volume.
I always liked, before the draft, I said, I'm so interested in Scoot. He's the more exciting one. But what Brandon Miller is, like, for today's NBA, just makes more sense. I think we saw that translate. He got 20 points tonight on pretty decent efficiency. He's a good free throw shooter. Takes a lot of threes of volume. The Hornets are the worst team in the league, basically. I mean, there's a lot of worse teams in the league, but they do have the worst net rating. They get blasted. It's basically non-serious basketball. But, you know, you kind of look through that and say, like, hey, there's like a 6'9 guy with elite ball skills. And if there's a playmaking dimension he can add on top of this, he could be an all-star caliber player in the next couple of years.
Aaron just mentioned it. I was going to do that as like a bit. I think people would be surprised to realize that Brandon Miller is 6'9". He's a big dude. And his quickness and his touch in the paint is so much more lethal at his height. He can finish over centers with an ability that you don't really see with the sort of younger, springy, scoring wing types that we get now as rookies. He's a really polished finisher. And I love what I've seen from the mid-range. Some people were worried about maybe he was going to struggle from three, or he was going to get too reliant on the mid-range, but he's shot it just enough, and he's been really good at it.
Yeah, I listened to his college coach talking about how much Brandon really tried to just shoot threes and shoot, tried to have that 20-20 like shot profile from distance. And thus far in the NBA, it's almost like 45% from three, and then a good amount close, but he is hitting from each level. He is 50% in that 16-foot to 3-point range. I think we kind of just overthought it. He's a 6'9 guy that can hit a lot of shots. If he can learn to play defense, that's better. I watched their game against the Clippers. Paul George gave him a lot of work. George. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to see how he would live up to his idol, because that's what you do, was go against your idol. But I don't know. I really liked what he's seen. I wanted to give him some flowers here. So I didn't prepare anything for sixth man or most improved. Dill and I discussed it a little bit ago. So if you guys want to rapid fire your takes, by all means.
Good deal.
Aaron, what's your ballot?
The most improved player is Jalen Johnson. I don't want to hear shit else about anyone else. Nate nailed this in the, I forget what we called the exercise. What did we do? It was what did we call that?
I think we were just projecting breakout of players.
Yeah. And me and Dylan both were like, who? We literally said who. when you said Jalen Johnson, you're like, I like Jalen Johnson. You're like, this is a non-serious pick. On my scale, Jalen Johnson is 256 last year between James Wiseman and Gary Harris. This season, he's 60th. That's an unprecedented jump. It's precedent, but I'm not going to figure out if it is or not. I'm just going to say it isn't. It's unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this before. he is one of the best starters in the league. And like, if you're going to say he's a top 50 player next season, that's a legitimate projection that you could make, because he's still only 22 years old.
I'll take it.
Yeah, Jalen Johnson's my MIP too. I considered two other guys. I considered Kobe White, and I considered Tyrese Maxey. Tyrese Maxey was my two, but I decided to give it to Jalen Johnson because Maxey sort of stepped into a predetermined role. Not to say that what he's done this season isn't great, or entirely expected. Like, he was significantly better than I think we all thought. But Johnson's jump was way more surprising. He broke into his own role as opposed to sliding into a role.
Maybe it was just because I was higher on Jalen Johnson coming into the year. I ended up going with Maxey. I actually went with Kobe White.
Wasn't as into Maxey. I don't know. I guess I wasn't as interested.
I knew what Jalen Johnson was all along. This is an improvement to me. This is expectation.
There we go.
We just needed the opportunity.
But we knew the Maxey thing was coming.
Yeah.
Where did we have him? We had him 48.
He was my pick at the beginning of the year.
Preseason.
To be MIP.
He ended up being 22nd on the scale. Yeah. It's a nice jump. It's been good. My sixth man's Malik Monk. It was him or Naz Reid. You go 50-50 on that. I think what 50, I like so much 50. About Monk is the closing aspect of it is that he was like the guy with the ball in his hands. Yeah. I mean, they like he look if you don't watch basketball, you turn on a Kings game and you're like, this Malik Monk guy has the ball 80% of the time in the fourth quarter in overtime. Like, they just spam his pick and rolls as Sabonis over and over and over again. And like, Naz Reid was super efficient. Like, had like was just crazy, like guard in a 6'10 body. I liked what Monk was doing as a playmaker. He stepped into that passing role.
That is one thing that I really look for in terms of picking six men is like, who's playing the important minutes. It's one thing to light up second units, but to be a guy who's in the closing five, the way that Malik was, or the way that like Bogdan Bogdanovic was, although the Hawks were absolutely terrible.
Malik Monk is also pretty clearly my sixth man. I didn't think too much about Naz Reid. He's a cool guy. He's got cool hair. He's a really interesting player. But what Malik Monk does for the Kings, the fact that we are going to win upwards of 45 games with one singular guy providing not only all of our offense, but all of the facilitation for that offense. Like, for one guy to produce all of that for a 45-plus win team, and hey, maybe it works. I mean, we'll see how much we miss him in the playoffs very soon, I guess. But he was pretty far away.
Playoffs.
The sixth man of the year. Or, oh, yeah, Jesus.
Love that. I love the optimism. In the one game we get smited in. Yeah.
You ready to play 9-10 playing game against the Warriors?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. No, I feel really good.
My sixth man of the year is Jesus Christ, because through him, he empowers Cole Anthony and Jonathan Isaac, and I would assume Mo Wagner probably has some.
Is
Christian
Cole Anthony religious too?
Yeah, preacher John.
Just the Magic's. Hello. The Magic's bench is the sixth man of the year.
Greg Anthony is a very religious man, so I assume it transfers down to Cole. So. Yeah, we're going with Jesus Christ as our sixth man of the year.
Because, all right. You know. All right. praise be. That's what I say to that.
On
praise be.
Wings of Eagles, something.
All right.
All right. Dylan, where can the people find you?
Every week, including this one and the last one, where we did our All-NBA selections on the Hoops Temple podcast.
Aaron, where can the people find you?
Possible Chairs on TikTok, one word. Possible Chairs on Twitter. My Patreon, Possible Chairs Media Lounge. And this podcast, occasionally, starting in mid-May, I'll probably be on every week. I'll be back. So more consistent viewership there.
Jack?
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on TikTok at JackTheKingsFan. You can find me on Twitter at JackDanKF. And you can find me around Kings games if I can ever find my way out of Mexico.
You can find me, Nate_HoopsTemple, TikTok and YouTube. You can also email us, HoopsTemple@gmail.com. And go ahead, jump the Discord. The link is in wherever you found this show. Love to chat with you guys there. Catch you later.